plate a potential nugget.
And as a coach, Ashley, one of the pieces I'm curious about is moving from cognition to behavior change, right? In the book, clearly there's a lot about bringing this notion of time and money and the trade-off to people's awareness. In your research, what have you observed about people that are able to effectively convert the awareness to making behavioral changes? What are some of the roadblocks and what are some of the watchouts as people who read your book and who want to implement changes in their life and drive behavioral change to experience more time affluence? What would be your advice to some of these people, and what are some of the watchouts they should be aware of?
Yeah, so I'm a behavioral scientist, a social psychologist by training. So I care a lot about helping people take their values and live them in practice on an everyday basis. And there's a lot of metaphor throughout the book likening putting time first as becoming healthier, exercising more. Although we think about needing to do something drastic, like training for a marathon or quitting our job when it comes to time, actually the biggest gains in the long run come from small, simple changes around the margins that involve disrupting our daily habits. People often ask me, well, as a time researcher, what's one thing that you've done to put time first? And one thing that I've done quite successfully is to disrupt my morning habit of rolling out of bed and going straight to the computer. For me, personally, when I do that, that colors my entire day. I become immediately heads down and work focused and really don't look up at all until the day is done. However, when I disrupt that initial habit of rolling out of bed and going to my computer with something more active or pleasant instead, I'm much more likely to be aware, present in the moment, and capitalize on opportunities for social connection, like chatting with my colleague or spending time with my spouse in between work meetings. Given that we're all working from home, we can do that now. And so that for me was one unlock that I've made recently that I think is really important. And these small, simple changes are going to look very different for everyone. But I really push people to not get into this dichotomous thinking that's similar to what happens in the sphere of eating healthy. I need to eat every healthy meal completely clean, fruit and vegetables for every meal. Otherwise, what's the point? Similarly, we shouldn't think, well, I need to change my career or move or work 20 hours less if I'm ever going to become time affluent. My research suggests that simply spending 30 minutes engaged in an active leisure pursuit is likely to pay really important dividends for stress reduction and happiness. So it's about finding and committing to small changes on an everyday basis consistently in a similar way to physical activity. I would say that one of the opportunities is, again, like fitness, to get everyone in your household on board. I've heard a lot of optimistic stories in the work from home environment where families together are making dinners technology free or communicating about boundaries between work and home that have gone missing that we can talk about in a moment. But I think trying to engage in norms, both at an individual or household level and also a team level, are really important for helping us follow through. I think another trap that we get into is thinking that time management is a completely individual problem. And although I'm a social psychologist, a micro-organizational scholar, I focus on individual level decision-making, it's very important to recognize that time is a collective resource. Our workplaces shape how we spend our time. Our governments shape how we spend our time. Our partner shapes how we spend our time. And so we also need to be engaging our partners, our friends, our workplaces, if we really are serious about cultivating greater time affluence in our lives.
Something similar came up in my conversation with Raj Raghunathan, an individual who's researched the topic of happiness for a while. When I asked him about the notion of how we all can build time affluence, this is what he said.
So, you know, I interviewed Melanie Rudd, who's one of the co-authors on that paper that talks about time affluence after encountering images that induce a sense of awe. If you think about awe, right? Awe is an emotion that we feel when we are confronted with something that is far grander than ourselves, right? And usually you would imagine that encountering something like that makes us feel little and belittled, and we end up being humiliated or insulted, or, you know, feeling like we are not powerful, not very positive. But in fact, you know, being in front of, I don't know, El Capitan, right, at Yosemite. By the way, I mean, I just saw this movie called Free Solo a couple of days back. I highly recommend it for those who haven't watched it. So, or in front of the Grand Canyon, or, you know, in front of the Himalayas, the mountains, rivers, things like that, or the galaxy, you know, we're just watching the Milky Way on a nice night, inspires you with this feeling of smallness. And somewhat kind of paradoxically, that smallness is actually a good feeling. And it makes you feel that, you know what, I think what it does is it makes you feel that life has existed. There are so many things beyond my control. There's so many big, beautiful things. You know, why am I worrying about things that are going on in my life and getting really stressed out and worked up about it? You know, I'm going to be gone in 80-100 years, and let me just have a good time in the meanwhile. You know, so it kind of induces this sense of time abundance or time affluence in the short run. It's not a permanent change, obviously, okay? But I think that it is a very useful hack. So whenever you're feeling really stressed out, I think it might be a good idea to kind of, you know, take a look at one of the, nowadays we have, you know, things on YouTube, right? So just look at the size of the Earth compared to the universe. So just Google something like that. And it definitely works for me. You know, it induces a sense of time affluence.
Just to share a personal anecdote, I'm reminded of a trip that I made with my family to Ajanta and Ellora Caves in Aurangabad about 3 years back. Just looking at the majesty of the caves blew me away. Thousands of people had chipped away on the rock for hundreds of years to build this magnificent piece of work. I still undertake time travel to that moment in time to get some perspective on time and to understand what the long game means. Sometimes, in the buzz of the day-to-day, I feel that there's a lot of emphasis on the here and now. But going back to what Raj says, there's something about these large grand things, whether it's man-made or natural. They do change one's perspective of time and significance.